This is the December 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Chuck Shelby. He's at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joe Vaclovic is here from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. And Dan Zwicker joins us from Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. Right there on demand, just click and play at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast applications. Let's start, as we usually do, by getting a list of items to discuss for the day. Chuck Shelby, what's on your list?
Well, I think I'm going to look ahead to 2021 and the acreage mixture, and I think next week's USDA report could have a big impact on that if the bean carryout is tightened up even more.
Joe Vaclovic?
I would discuss the slowing of export demand or export sales in soybeans. We've had marketing year lows in soybean export sales each of the last 4 weeks, and it's not necessarily a surprise, but certainly a topic of conversation.
And Dan Zwicker?
Oh, I think those two pretty well sums it up. I mean, I would probably maybe put into the mix the weakening dollar and how that may or may not impact us as we go forward, whether it's going to be negative or positive.
Let's start with this question. I think I'll go around the horn with each of you. We are at highs, especially for soybeans. Corn, not terribly bad as well. Places where producers can make money on old crop or that which is in the bin or at the elevator at this moment, should they go ahead and finish out sales? Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities, your thought.
We made multiple attempts at $12, and the market has been turned back a few times. But I think a lot of producers have already sold quite a few beans, and at this point, I think they're content to wait and see how South American weather turns out. The potential for this market to continue to go if South America comes in with a mediocre crop gives producers, I think, opportunities down the road that they may want to wait for if they've sold a lot of beans.
And for corn?
On the corn side of the equation, I think we're kind of at fair value based upon, a carryout at 1.7 area. For producers, the basis is still very good here in the Eastern Corn Belt. So if I was going to sell anything, I think producers have more corn to sell. And I like the opportunity on a good basis here going into the end of the year, and I'd probably look at selling some corn.
Joe Vaclovic, your best cash sales ideas at this time?
There's been a lot of storage built across the country over the last decade, or maybe longer than that, whatever time frame you want to put on it. There's more storage on farm than ever. And in a market like this, it's kind of interesting because we don't have any carry. There's absolutely no carry in the soybean market. There's very, very little carry in the corn market. So you can't really use the bins in the way that they're meant to be used. You should be using bins as a means to capture carry, essentially. If you're putting corn or soybeans in the bin now, you're doing it, purely out of speculation for better prices, unless, of course, you've got some carry in your local cash market, which is the case in some areas. I'm a fan of being a seller here, especially for the next few weeks. I know that a lot of guys will not be convinced under any circumstances to be totally sold out of these crops before the end of the year. But these are good prices. I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. And I know that the fundamental topics of conversation are going to shift very drastically here. We're going to start talking about, the South American crop, how big is it, when does China come back to the U.S. bean market because they're in the process of leaving right now, and then what sort of production do we have next year? You could sit on these crops to next spring or summer and wait on a 2021 weather market, and I think a lot of people will do just that. So a lot of things are going to change here over the next couple months.
Dan, Joe almost put an alley-oop pass up there for you to dunk as it relates to bins, I think. What are your thoughts on old crop?
Well, everybody has their own risk. Everybody has their own style of marketing, and everybody wants to do their own thing. And I guess depending upon where you're sold at, I think a guy could probably own a little bit of inventory. I've been in the camp, want to sell fall rallies, early year rallies, because I think the odds are pretty high. Maybe we could see a calendar year high in the first 3 months of this year, and we could tail down the rest of 21. So I'm in the selling camp. Now, I kind of thought this market probably had enough steam to go maybe go up through the election and then or Thanksgiving and then begin to peter out. It started to roll down a little bit earlier this week. We did see a bounce back today. The key here is if today has follow through. If it doesn't, then I think we're going to see a little deeper correction into December. My cyclical work would say that we would see some turbulence going into December, position squaring, year-end stuff, outside market influences, whatever. But the market feels to me like it's, you know, a 93, 94 type crop year. And it wouldn't surprise me if the thing stays firm into the January crop report. But I don't want to own a lot of inventory. I would rather own it on with a call option or something like that. And I would be looking ahead at 21 opportunities, or at least putting in some price floors to kind of protect me from a sinking market in 21. Now, that's just my guess, and we'll see. I'll take 1 week at a time, but we've had a nice run here. The market is due for a corrective measure of some kind, and once they start, sometimes they have a tendency to go deeper than what everybody expects.
1993, of course, the year of the great flood, the marketplace flying a little blind after August, and particularly the crop production report, if I remember correctly, on the number of acres that were available yet to harvest. And I'm wondering what comparison you're making at this point.
The only comparison I make, as I mentioned on Thursday afternoon, is that I know we don't really technically have a short crop. We've got a good crop, but it would not go down in history as a short crop. But it's a short crop based upon what the market was looking at in January and February. We were looking at large carryover stocks for old crop. We started off with the growing season, fairly quick planting. We had some rough spots, but overall rating levels looked good, like we had a good crop coming. So the end user really wasn't aggressive in accumulating the inventory. He thought, oh, I got plenty of old crop corn. New crop corn looks pretty good. No major drought problems, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, USDA decides that, it lost 300,000 or 300 million bushels of corn on the September stocks report. Once we got into the field, we found out that the yields were not as good as what we thought they were. So, therefore, I think the market is acting like a short crop. And you can see where each crop report, the yield has come down a little bit. So short crops keep getting shorter. And I'm kind of in the opinion, I don't know whether we'll see this in the December report, but, you know, there's probably a better chance than of the crop coming smaller in December and January than it is probably going larger. So that's why I'm kind of looking. It feels like the 93-94 crop to me, but that's just my guess. And the market did top out on the January 94 crop report. That was the top of the old crop market, or that 93 market. Now the 94 crop came back and made a double top in June, but the 93 corn and soybean crop topped out on the January crop report.
Chuck, you mentioned next week's USDA report as it relates to the acreage mix for the 2021 crop year, especially for soybean acres. Can you tell me why that's the case?
Well, I think when you look at Dan's comments there, and we look at 93, that was a supply problem, and we did have a supply problem compared to what we thought we were going to have. But on the other hand, we've had a real big perk up in demand, especially from China. And when you couple those two together, I think that's a dynamic that in this upcoming year is going to be really important. So we're very tight on the soybean carryout, one of the second tightest ever in modern history. So if they would happen to increase demand next week, or whatever the acres are, if we tighten down from 190, that's going to give beans a shot in the arm. I know China's kind of backed off buying, but if South America's short on production just a little bit, world carry out on beans is extremely tight. And if you have soybean futures, even where they are today at 1040, and December corn at 410, $4 East corn has been very common other than last year. That's just not a spectacular price. 1050 beans or maybe higher bean futures, I think producers looking into next year are going to favor soybeans. Another factor that's out there is in Iowa, where they had a lot of corn blown down. It's going to be virtually impossible to plant corn on corn into those fields where you have so much down corn. So I think beans are going to be a driving factor that are going to attract more acres from the producer standpoint going forward, as long as corn just wants to hang around in the $4 range.
And then, Joe Vaklovic, you mentioned the slowing export sale pace for soybeans. Chuck tailed into that as well. Can you give me your view of what's happening there?
I'm going to make a couple comments on the acres situation before I get there. In 2021, we are in all likelihood going to have a lot more overall acres. You got to remember, in 2019, we had record prevent plant. It was 19.6 million. We had over 10 million acres of prevent plant this year. So if we go back to like a 2017, 2018 type level, 2 or 3 million acres of prevent plant, we're going to pick up a good 7 million acres of principal crop acres in this country. A lot of those could go to soybeans with these prices. Some of the early spreadsheet work that I've seen indicates that, you know, in a lot of areas of the Corn Belt, soybeans have a $50 per acre advantage versus corn, give or take, and I know everybody's numbers are different. But that's one thing that you've got to keep your eye on is regardless of price, and I know these prices are much better than what we're accustomed to, regardless of price, we're going to see increased overall acreage next year, almost undoubtedly, barring a big prevent plant situation, which I'd say is probably not likely for a third year in a row.
Joe, I'll let you get to those export numbers in just a second. However, I would like to take just a moment to remind folks that we're in the middle of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And one of the things that happened in the Tuesday event when Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen, both ag economists at the University of Illinois, were looking at price prospects for 2021 was that they, too, put together some numbers as it relates to acreage. In fact, principal acreage, they took up 7 to 8 million acres. As Joe Vaklovic just mentioned, that he was thinking about, and they had some thoughts on what that meant for the marketplace. You can see that right now, if you'd like, on the Farm Doc Daily website. Just look for the registration page for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. That's the IFES webinar, IFES, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. There are four of those webinars left. They're running at 11 a.m. on Fridays and Tuesdays, so you can catch them if you'd like and get yourself signed up right now. Now, let's turn our attention back to what's at hand. Joe, tell me about the soybean export market.
Okay, so in each of the last 4 weeks, we have seen marketing year lows in soybean export sales. The marketing year begins on September 1st. So since that time, the last 4 weeks represent the four worst weeks of export sales. China's still an active buyer. They were still the top buyer of soybeans this last week, but the amounts have really declined. We saw some net cancellations from unknown destinations that could have been China. There's been some rumors floating around that China had canceled or would cancel some soybean cargoes. The thing about this is that it should not be a surprise to anybody who's been paying attention. We know that China has actually been actively buying beans from Brazil for February, March, April delivery. The U.S. is not competitive during that time frame versus Brazil as of right now. So it's not a surprise that the exports are dropping off. I guess my question is that, you know, now that this is the case, we don't have that super strong export demand. What's the bullish story to push this thing? We've known about the light carryout projections. We know that soybean crush is record high. I don't know what what sort of bullish info you get from the export side right now, barring a big South American crop issue. And I guess that's maybe the next thing to talk about.
Well, let's do talk about South America. What do we think about the weather in South America? Chuck, maybe you can take a look at it. What are you hearing about production there and whether it can stay up to snuff given the weather they've had so far, or if it will be made up in large part by the total number of acres, which has increased, I believe, in Brazil?
Well, the dry areas of central Brazil have been extremely dry. You had central southern Argentina extremely dry, and then you had an area in southern Brazil and northern Argentina that have received some really, you know, pretty adequate to good rain. So kind of a split of half the country in Brazil, half Argentina has not been in good shape at all in a drought, and other areas have been pretty good. Some of these recent rains are going to shift into some of the drier areas, give them some relief, but you're going to dry out in the areas that have had received rainfall. So it's certainly not a normal pattern. They're way behind on moisture. Going forward, I think it's going to be critical to see that they do receive adequate rainfall everywhere, but that just doesn't seem to be in the cards at the moment. So again, we go back to world supplies, U.S. supplies, and it just is necessary that they have a really good crop. At this point, to me, you can probably maybe dial in best case an average crop, but coming to the idea that they're going to have one of their better crops just seems to be pretty unrealistic with the kind of weather they've gone through so far.
Is there a reason to believe, Joe Vaclavic, that post-AFS, and I don't know whether we're really there in the swine herd in China, that they will dramatically increase their need for soybeans? Or has China reconfigured its rations such that it won't need so much? And is it going to substitute other products that are synthetic rather than using bean meal and other types of meal as a protein?
I think that first thing, I wanted to go back to Brazil real quick. Just so everybody's clear on this, every single crop estimate out there that I've seen is calling for a record crop in Brazil. Probably not record yields, but keep in mind that they increase acreage down there. So even the lowest crop estimates, those ones down in the 120s, those would still be a record crop if realized for Brazil overall. In regard to China, I'm kind of optimistic that they're going to get back to like a normal-ish type program in regard to the United States and what they buy. I think that the tariff days are over in all likelihood, especially with Trump on his way out. I think that that's probably likely. Do they go crazy buying U.S. beans next year? I guess a lot of that does depend on the African swine fever. You got to remember that African swine fever, it's kind of funny the timing. I think I've mentioned this on the show before. African swine fever and the trade war started like kind of around the same time. So it was like the most ideal time ever for China to put a tariff on U.S. beans, because it was probably the time when they could afford to do it. They could afford to import less beans. But I'm pretty optimistic that they're going to be back to like a normal-ish type buying trend, you know, seasonally, where they're buying U.S. beans actively this time of year. They're going to switch to Brazil in the early part of the calendar year and then kind of go back and forth like they have typically done.
We've been building a case here, Dan, about the export market in particular for soybeans, for corn too, I suppose. However, the dollar does make a difference as to how high or low priced the products are coming from the United States. You wanted to discuss a weakening dollar. What do you see?
Well, I think the weakening dollar is going to be at least price supportive to physical assets, and whether that's, you know, corn, soybeans, steel, gold, real estate, whatever. So I do think that is going to continue. I think it's a long-term trend for a weakening dollar. Politicians of both flavors, that's one thing they do like to do, is spend more money than they have. And I really don't see that coming to an end anytime soon in Washington. So I think we're constantly going to go through currency devaluation, whatever you want to call it, inflation. I think it's going to feel more like currency devaluation. You're just going to wake up some morning and everything that you buy is going to be 20% higher or 50% higher. It's not going to be like what we experienced in the 70s where it went up every week. But if you go to, I'm a gun nut, and ammo stores and ammunition prices and gun prices have, I mean, they've all doubled. It's unreal of what's happened in that market. It's almost like the toilet paper market was back in March. But I do think this weakening dollar is just going to really be reflected in less purchasing power of everybody's income, and that's going to make food prices much higher.
Chuck Shelby, what should producers be thinking most about at this time of year?
Well, they've got to make some decisions going forward here. I think a lot of producers were caught off guard with the amount of rally we had. Fortunately, here in the Eastern Corn Belt, most producers have a good crop. So focus on gross revenue. Producers received a lot of payments from the USDA. So overall, I think a lot of producers are going to have a very good year. I think looking forward to next year, we're going to have some price opportunities that we haven't had for a while. And as far as taking advantage of those, it's going to be a little bit tricky going into 2021. There's a lot of moving parts, but I think there's a lot of good things to look forward to.
And Joe, what are you most often telling the clientele that give you a call and ask about corn or soybeans?
I tell them that this is something to be happy about, and I tell them that marketing in bull markets is just as difficult and sometimes even more difficult than marketing grain in bear markets. You know, in bear markets, when corn's at $3, the decision for a lot of people is very easy. I'm not going to sell anything. I'm going to wait. In a market like this where profitability is available, I think the decision in some ways actually becomes a little bit more complicated. You have that fear of missing out on one hand, but at the same time, you don't want to miss a great opportunity and find yourself back with no profitability. So I stress that you cannot neglect your marketing because prices are good, because they offer profitability. There's still risk, there's still reward. But I think that these up markets, if you want to call them that, they present their own sets of problems. This does not get any easier. They're better problems to have. It's a better set of problems when you're looking at some black ink. But the problems and the difficulties that go with marketing don't go away.
It might be just as hard, but Joe, it's far more satisfying to market in a bull market.
Oh, I know it is.
Hey, let's begin to wrap things up here. And I think, Chuck, I'll come back to you from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Chuck Shelby, your final word for the day.
Well, I look forward to 2021 as a producer. I think we've gone through a pretty negative time in agriculture. I think in agriculture we should feel fortunate that we do have opportunities. There's a lot of other businesses out there that are really going to struggle in 2021. So feel fortunate, feel positive, and I think we're going to have good opportunities and a good year in 2021 in agriculture.
Joe Vaclavec of Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee, your final word for the day?
Start to focus on some of the items that we're going to be talking about 2 or 3 months from now. U.S. acreage, inflation potentially, what sort of demand is out there next year, what does a weakening dollar mean? I think you've got to start looking at those next topics of conversation. The China buying all our soybeans and a bunch of corn and that stuff, that's old news as far as I'm concerned. I think ethanol is something we didn't talk about on the show. Maybe we should have. There's some potential problems with ethanol moving forward. You got to focus on that and this COVID situation. What does that mean? But start to think a few steps ahead. Don't think about what we've been talking about for the last 2 months. Try to think about the next 2 months.
And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, your final word, and I think you have an announcement for us today, too.
Yeah, I want to tell everybody that I'm going to step away from WILL on the Thursday afternoon program and Commodity Weeks. I've been thinking about it for some time. I've always wanted to go out on an up market, and this is an up market. So this is my opportunity to step out on when the market is higher. Looking back at it, it's been 32 years since I think I was on the first commodity program, Commodity Week program. We drove to Champaign. Charlie Lindy was there. It was 1988. And so it's been a 32-year run doing the Thursday afternoon and Commodity Week program. And I just think it's time for the next generation to take over. I'm not retiring from the market, so I do have some Bicker clients in College Station and Houston that I will be giving technical opinions to for their strategies. And I will have an account on Parler and MeWe and Rumble. So Rumble is the YouTube. So I will probably have some Rumble videos. And then my Twitter comments will now be on Parler. So I'm going to drop off of Facebook and I'm going to drop off of Twitter and YouTube. So, but I will still be around. And like I told Todd, that I am open to coming back once in a while as a special guest to kind of talk about some of the cyclicals and technicals that that I see in the market. And I really want to say thanks to all the farmers that have supported me through my market advisory career that started back in the mid-70s. There's nothing more loyal than a farmer customer. They've been very loyal. They've been through ups and downs with me through AgriVisor, DTN, AgriVisor, and then I went into the last few years into the commercial grain trade. I've had an excellent career. I want to do anything different, and I love farmers, but it's kind of nice not having too much sold on the way up and not enough sold on the way down. So so that's kind of the way I like I told Todd, I still think I got one or two Thursdays yet to go before the end of the year, before we go into the holiday season. But this will be my last Commodity Week as an analyst for WLL.
If you were on the first one, it was April, I want to say 4 of 1988. Thank you for doing that. But you've been on the air longer than that. I think we go back to 1985 with the closing market report. So all the years of service.
You got me started earlier, probably 87. I was probably on the radio in 87, but Commodity Week started, I think, in 88.
It did indeed. Hey, thank you. Thank you for all the years of service, and thank you for being with us on Thursday every week for such a very long time. And we'll look forward to these last couple of Thursdays that are coming up on the Closing Market Report, too.
I will be, too.
That is Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He and Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee, and Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, joined us on this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.